Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. And ladies and gentlemen, I am so proud to have one of South Orange's own, Mr. Pete Chapman, who is the president and creative director of The Director. Pete, welcome to the program and thank you for interrupting your, I know, and I always say this, but this is very true, very extremely busy schedule.
Hey, Darrell, thank you for having me. It's great to see your face again and catch up a little bit before we did this. So I'm excited to be here.
So Pete, before we jump into all the great things that you're doing, can you share with our audience, for those for the small amount of people who may not know you, a little bit about your education background and your experience?
Well, yeah. So, you know, I guess I am one of South Orange's own. I'm a K through 12 guy in South Orange Maplewood School District. You know, professionally, I picked up the camera thanks to, and I hope it's still there. You know, I don't know what's going on at Columbia High School now, but when I was there, we had a photography program where we developed our own film. We had a Super 8 filmmaking program where we developed our own film. And then the public access or local, you know, TV station ran through a studio at the school. And so in 11th grade, I was immersed in all of these things. And I was really drawn to filmmaking. And so at the time, my teacher, George Chase, all of his anecdotes began with when I was at NYU. And so I was like, well, clearly that's where you go. And this is, you know, I'll go ahead and date myself. This was 1993 to 1995, like my last 2 years in high school. And so, you know, I didn't even know you could go to school for filmmaking or to be a director or anything like that. And so I did my research on that. I saw that many of the directors that I admired had gone there, in particular Spike Lee. And so I was like, well, clearly this sounds like the goal. And so, you know, I went to NYU, graduated, and then came back to South Orange after, because I lived with my mom while I was working on, raising money for my first feature and building my company. So I know the village well.
Oh, no doubt. And so, Pete, for those who may not know, you have directed over 50 episodes of television, including HBO's Max, The Flight Attendant, Insecure, Silicon Valley, Love Life, Netflix U, ABC's Grey's Anatomy, Blackish, Stars, Blindspotting, FX. I mean, it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And then, of course, the Apple TV Plus series Mythic Quest. And I'm sure there's quite a few more, like the old G, I remember.
Last OG, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you talked about this class and seat at South Orange Columbia High School. What was the motivating factor when you're in that photography class in your junior and senior year to say, hey, I think I might want to make a career out of this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like in the early years, if I can call them that, I think curiosity is important. I think that's the driving force, because you go through, you know, you're going to pick something up and then put it down because it's not for you. And you have to keep picking things up to find the thing that you really respond to. And at that time I was picking up, you know, I wanted to be an architect, and then, you know, I was in music and I was writing things, you know, and there was just something about, I don't know if this is the right use of the word or whatever, but there was just like a fluency that I felt when I picked up the camera and was completing the assignments. And, you know, we had a one assignment, you know, minimum, you know, and I would do like 10 per quarter. You know, the thing about it, there was also a level of, I tell this story often, like we had an assignment to just go, whatever, film the little thing we were going to film. And I had someone getting off a train at South Orange train station, which is on a platform, and then, you know, getting on a phone, which is at street level. And I did it in two shots. And George Chase, the teacher, was like, that was a really good way to condense that story. And I was like, huh, okay. You know what I mean? It was just like that little bit of like, you know, you might have something there that kind of also kept me interested in continuing. And I think that that probably speaks to how important it is to have support around you, you know? And then even at this time where it was not, you know, people weren't actively going to film school in 1995. I mean, obviously people were going, but it was still like, you going where?
You know, right.
Yeah. So, you know, parents supported it, you know what I mean? Like, and I think that was because ultimately the curiosity turned into passion. And it was clear that I was very deliberate about the craft and the business of it.
Well, you know, your first project was actually a thesis film, correct?
Mm-hmm.
With Kerry Washington. And that, I guess that occurred during your time at NYU, correct?
Yeah, that's the first one I would say that people outside of, like, you know, my classroom saw. And that, yeah, that was called 3D. That went to Sundance. You know, if you're graduating from film school, and this holds up, you're kind of, if you want to direct, your goal is to have a thesis film that you kind of culminate your time there and says, here's my calling card to the professional world. Right. And so this film went to about 30 festivals around the world, starred Kerry Washington before, obviously, she was Kerry Washington.
Kerry Washington. You have a history of this with catching people before they're huge. And Zoe Saldana, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it was, and it just speaks to, you know, I think looping back in, like, this idea of, like, passion, like, you know, right now, I'm in the middle of directing the season finale for a show that she's in, she's producing and that she is starring in with Delroy Lindo.
And that's on Hulu, correct?
That's on Hulu, yeah. And it's like that full circle to go from April 1999 to now, what is it, July 2022.
Yes.
I mean, that's 23 years, you know what I'm saying? And wow. Just like, you know, you stay on the path and you know that these things are possible. There's no, like, you can't be prescriptive and say in 23 years I'll be working with this person again, but, you know, everybody stays on their path and we kind of meet again.
Yes. I know you have a great relationship, a long-term relationship with Doreen Missick.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember years ago when you had your independent film company, I was on your advisory board, and I mm-hmm. never forget the meeting and meeting Doreen in person that time. Really cool. You know, the thing that I appreciate about you is that you have these very genuine, authentic relationships that stand the test of time.
Mm. Yeah, thank you. I mean, he was, we started, so when I mentioned the things that nobody will ever see, like, he was in one of those first projects in 97, which then led to the thesis film. And then, I mean, for those watching the video version of this, I mean, every two of the three posters behind me are centered around him,
okay.
You know, uh-huh. And he was a co-officiant, you know, for our wedding. So it's, I think that's an interesting thing that sometimes people, it's weird because I feel like I'm not the sage wisdom guy, but I do feel like what I see often is people want to, like, you know, align themselves with people who they think are successful. But what happens time and time again is that en route to being successful, people align themselves with other like-minded creatives. And then you cut to 5, 10, 15 years later because they stayed on the path. Right. Now that's a successful circle of people.
Right. And something you said there is extremely wise, staying on the path. And, you know, my wife, Deb and I, we have watched you stay on this path, and we're always beaming, say, oh yeah, this is Pete Chapman. He's from South Orange. Yeah. You know?
Love it.
So, you know, the other day I posted an article that I read in Wired magazine about this young lady named Katrina Miller. She is a PhD student at the University of Chicago in physics, you know, and the article in Wired really featured her and other folks that she brought in to talk about the challenges of not having the right type of mentors, You know, how was your experience at NYU? You're a very positive and constructive guy, and I've never heard you say anything ill of NYU, but did you feel that you were getting the necessary support as a Black filmmaker?
That's a great question. I'd say no, honestly. You know what I mean? I think that and part of that is not an indictment. Part of that was an education for me in relationships, right? Because, you know, I was like, all right, I go to NYU, I do my work. More often than not, I was back to Jersey on the weekend, whether it was like hang with my girlfriend at the time or, you know, work or whatever it might have been. And I did not actively seek out people to, for lack of a better word, like that would be like, you know, this is my guy. You know what I mean? Like that would put their arm around me and be like, this is my young director here. I didn't do that. I was kind of quiet. You know, I did the work and thought that that was enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in no circumstances is that really enough. I mean, unless you're in a meritocracy or an undisputable thing, like you're putting up 30 points and 20 rebounds a night, like they're going to find you. Right.
But
like,
right.
But, you know, you made a cool film, like, yeah, okay. But, and then add the fact that a lot of the things that you may be interested in telling stories about are not at the forefront of the gatekeeper's sensibility. Mm-hmm. You can feel like a tree falling in the forest, you know,
right.
That no one hears. And so did it really fall?
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, I had to learn, I took that lesson from my experience with 3D after it won all these awards and traveled and went to Sundance. And then I came back to NYU and it didn't really get all the accolades I thought it would and should from what I had been told
right.
was the target, which was get your film in Sundance.
Right.
And my takeaway was like, you know what? I really didn't build any relationships here. And so I made a very deliberate pivot to working on myself to kind of come out of my shell, mm-hmm. and also recognizing that, you know, relationships are as important as the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's one more thing. A buddy of mine, Theo Travers, who was one of the first people I met at NYU, and right now he's a, you know, he's showrunner on this new show with Giancarlo Esposito.
Okay.
And he said there, and I don't know where he got it from. He was like, there's four stages in your career, right? In Hollywood. It's who is Pete Chapman? It's get me Pete Chapman. It's get me a younger Pete Chapman. And then, it's who is Pete Chapman? You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that's sad, but true. And also funny. And I think that when you get to the later part, like if this is true, when you get to the who is Pete Chapman again, it, you know, stages one and four are completely reliant upon your relationships. In right. the middle, there's an awareness of you that can go away, and the relationships you have are your insurance.
Right. Wow. That, you know, I've never heard it put like that, but that, And I think that applies to business as well.
Indeed.
You know, especially, you know, because I'm never ashamed to tell my age. I'm 63 now, and I advise a lot of startups and whatnot. And it's interesting when I'm talking to potential clients about mm-hmm. what they're looking for. Uh-huh. And it's always, you know, they think that the younger is better, and you know, there's nothing wrong with it. However, one thing that I learned from a professor at Harvard who teaches, Arthur Brooks, who teaches a course called Happiness at the Harvard Business School, he said, mm-hmm. you know, people 50, now you're not there yet, so you're not there yet, but
people, I'm close, I'm getting there.
People 50 and up are in their second curve, which mm-hmm. means that you have all of this experience, and then for folks who are in the second curve to really recognize how to share it and how to put it in context, you know, right. to that. Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. So
love that.
Before your breakout film, Premium, with Zoe Saldana, Dorian Missick, Hill Harper, and other notable actors, you did a few shorts, and you just mentioned it. You did 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also did Black Card, right? Or was Black Card after?
Black Card was after. But in that time, I did Chameleon, which was something I did locally. Mm-hmm. And then I also did a bunch of kind of, it's funny because it was inspired by Spike Lee, because I remember he did like these videos with like he was selling socks as Mars Blackman. and it was all to raise money and awareness around She's Gotta Have It.
Right.
And so I did a bunch of videos that were kind of designed to introduce premium and the tone of it and, yes. and my voice as a filmmaker. I just knew that, you know, there was a time where I was getting further and further away from when 3D had been made. And I was making inroads, I guess, toward, you know, pushing premium toward the finish line. But I was like, I'm just getting further and further away from being able to point you towards something that I've done.
Right.
And the analogy I would use is like, if you're a chef, you can't walk around and have the last meal you cooked been 4 years ago. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right. So, right.
You know, digital technology was arising. I was working. I had a job at NYU that allowed me to take out equipment. So it was like, let me show that I am what I say I am.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Now, Premium, you produced it, wrote, directed it, right? Mm-hmm. You raised money and all that. For these young aspiring directors out there, start to finish, how much time did it take from the time you said, I want to do this film? And then, of course, when it's actually, you know, in the can.
So this is funny. You know, sometimes my OCD comes in handy because I can probably tell you exactly. So I started writing it. I think I started writing it about May 15th, 1999.
Okay.
I graduated NYU. I had seen a lot of friends have success with their short film.
Yep.
And then when the people came knocking on the door saying, what's next? They were like, crickets, you know? So I watched that and I was like, all right, well, if they come knocking, I need to be prepared. So while I may have started writing it May 15th, 1999, all of my senior year, it was in my head. And I was just kind of thinking about the plot, thinking about the characters or whatnot. And so we went into production on the film on June 1st of 2005. So that right there is 6 years, right?
Right.
Then the film did not, we did the festival circuit in 2006. I think we premiered in March of 2006. And then we finally were available for people anywhere to watch in 2007,
right.
between a Netflix deal and then 08 came a Showtime cable premiere. So that's 8 to 9 years of dedicated, consistent work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we look at that time period, it's a lot of years, a lot mm-hmm. of dedication. What do you attribute your success to in regards to, you know, staying on the path, sticking to it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, man, Darrell, I think that's it, right? Like, I feel like there's a mixture of, I have a book that kind of chronicles the journey, and in each of the chapters, I really thought long and hard about what a keyword could be, because I feel like sometimes, like a guiding principle can get you through the tough times.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for me, it was, obviously, it was like passion. You know, I had a very real need to, you know, see my stories in the world, or see the way I viewed the world out in the world, you know, and maybe there's just the same level of, you know, narcissism that makes you want to be president. I don't know, you know what I mean? But like, I think that that was a driving force. And then I also, the big pivot was taking expectation out of the equation.
Okay.
So I was like, all right, I need to be making projects for me, because that will keep me happy as the months and years pile up and I'm not getting to the targets that I have for myself, you know, I can still two or three times a year make something for me, and that'll keep me creatively fulfilled while I'm in the valley period of the career. And so when I removed expectation, the irony is, you know, things began to open up. And I feel like it's like Yoda, or, you know what I mean? It's like classic kind of like, yeah, you know, you can't control the horse until you can control yourself. And I think that, you know, from Sundance to Premium to, you know, winning Tribeca in 2008 to all the things that were happening, I kind of was like, okay, I did the thing you guys said that was the goal. Where are y'all at?
Yeah.
Where's my ticket? You know what I mean? And underneath all of that, I was, even if I wasn't admitting it to myself, I was getting bitter.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And so I just got to a point where I was like, you know what? Actually, I'll tell you when it came up. I was in a program for directors at HBO trying to transition into TV.
Right.
And I was doing my short bio, and Kelly Edwards, who runs the program, you know, said, "You sound bitter." And I thought that I was being, you know, self-effacing, you know what I mean? And like, you know, I did this and then this didn't work. Like, I thought I was making light of it in a way.
Right.
And she was like, "You need to cut that part out."
Okay.
And so, and then I did that, and I was like, wow, it just started streamlining things. I changed my perspective.
Uh-huh.
And I made Black Card, like you mentioned.
Yes.
Literally for myself. And obviously I was still being smart about it. Like, let me, you know, do certain things. So if people do see it, they get a certain understanding of my ability. But that got picked up by HBO. And then that kind of led to these programs and that's how I got an agent and a manager. And it's just like, you know, if that was 2016, if I'd have known 17 years ago that I just shouldn't care, you know, and I should do it for myself, I would have done it earlier. But that's the journey of, you know, like you said, like the second, what, when you hit 50, the second,
second curve.
Yeah, the second curve. Like, that was mine, I guess.
Wow.
Developmentally.
Thank you for sharing that. And let's talk about your book. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to hear your thoughts about it, because I think I've seen your book unfold in your LinkedIn, not your mm-hmm. LinkedIn, but your Instagram post, when you talk about preparing for a shot. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of work that goes into that. Let's talk about your book. What prompted you to want to chronicle that and then to publish?
I've always been driven by, you know, and I this is my own term. I call it the valley period of the career, where it was like, you know, 02 to, you know, 2017.
Right.
And there were ups and downs, of course, but like, as far as like the trying to become someone that people hired and paid to do this directing thing, it was a valley. It was a desert, right? And so I would read, like you mentioned, Wired magazine. I had subscriptions to all these things, you know. I joined book clubs so I could read biographies of other directors and, you know, interviews and all these things. And I just felt that I was kind of cobbling together like my own little curriculum post NYU, and I felt that if there were a book that was like a mixture of how to inspiration and self-help,
right,
I would just need one book, you know what I mean? And so I kept detailed notes. Like, the book originally was going to be called Thanks for Nothing. And it was going to be about how it was going to be after raising money for Premium, because Spike always had a book for each film.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I'm going to do that. Right. It was going to be about how having nothing really forced me to be creative in figuring out how to produce that film.
Wow.
And then obviously I didn't write it, and the career pivoted, and I'm teaching at NYU. Then I'm running this production company, and I'm doing events, and you know, and every step of the way, there was a there was a guiding principle that I had to call on. And so, you know, the book is called Transitions, A Director's Handbook, A Director's Journey and Motivational Handbook. I don't even know
my own title. I love the title. I love the cover shot of you. I think you're crossing the street in New York, I think.
Yeah. It's funny. I came to New York and my buddy, I was like, I need a new headshot. And we took it right in the middle of Broadway on 28th Street.
It's a phenomenal book, ladies and gentlemen. It is Transitions, A Director's Journey and Motivational Handbook. So, I mean, Pete, you got a beautiful wife, Kelly McCreary, a new daughter. Where do you find, and you have your own podcast. Now, what's the name of your podcast?
Let's Shoot with Pete Chapman.
Let's Shoot with Pete Chapman. And I've enjoyed it. Do you sing, Pete? Do you sing? Do you have an instrument that you play? You do it all, man.
I do want to learn how to play a guitar. We have a guitar in the living room that I'm very interested in learning. But
okay.
Some point.
You know, one of your posts, someone provided you with a box that I think that chronicles your work. Is that correct?
Oh, was it the Apple box?
The Apple box.
Yes. Pardon me. I just wanted to have, so basically for those who don't know the terminology, an Apple box is like, it comes in three or four sizes and it's just an available piece of wood, essentially, that we use on set for a variety of different purposes. Sometimes we turn it on its side so somebody who maybe is not that tall can get a little height, or we might, you know, if we have to push a plant up a little bit higher into the frame, you know, like all these little things that we do, the movie magic. But they also become seats, you know, primarily. And I wanted to have one that would be a piece of art and something that would kind of keep me inspired during the day, because, you know, at any given moment you might have, you know, a challenging personality or you're running out of time or all the things that are part of the job. And I wanted to be able to like look down at this thing and be like, here's why I do it. And so my friend, Jill Knox Powell, I kind of told her about what was exciting to me. And it kind of goes from like, you know, the campfire and hieroglyphics to the typewriter and tablet and, you know, chronicles all these different directors and has quotes. And it's, people come up and say, oh, that looks dope. But B, you know, it's just kind of like a thing that I like to have close by.
Wow. You know, Pete, we are coming down to the final 3 minutes of the interview, and I want to give you the last word. What information would you like to share with our audience about Pete Chapman?
Man. So the last word, well, I would say, you know, I feel like for anybody that wants to do something, and that's everybody. And if you think you don't want to, there's probably a reason why you've pushed it aside. But if you dig deep and kind of really simplify, you know, I hate this analogy, but like sometimes like it's like if somebody put a gun to your head and said, what do you want to do? There is an answer. There is an answer, right? And so like consider that, you know, and be truthful about it and know that there are steps that you can take both creatively, logistically, spiritually, mm-hmm. you know, fill in the blank that can move the needle toward where you want to go. I'd like to think that I'm a testament to, you know, a kind of urgent patience, you know what I mean? Like in a sense of like every day I woke up trying to conquer that day to move toward the goal, knowing that it may not be today, right? So like just being able to kind of have that fire and you know, the thing about whether you're in seeking investment or like pushing your own thing out into the world, you know, it's like you're this train and that runs on coal, unfortunately, for this analogy. And right. you have to push shove it into the fire.
Right. That's right.
But then there's a point where you look up and because that train is beginning to get passengers, well, other people are buying tickets in advance. And now they want to know where you're going and they want to go there too. And I think that, you know, you've just got to embrace the fact that sometimes you're that shoveler. Not sometimes, all the time you are,
right?
You know, and in today's world of like democratized everything, the middleman has been removed. So now in many respects, the middleman is now you.
Yes.
And so you have to embrace that, just like you are involved in so many things with this podcast, because yep. mm-hmm. it is happening because you're the engine. So, right. you know, I would just say, after all that rambling, just know that it's possible.
Not rambling.
Break things wisdom. Down into wisdom. Units, yep. you know, and just be committed to the dream.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well said. Well, Pete, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Pete Chapman, who is the president, creative director of The Director. And also he is the director of many great TV shows and streaming shows as well. Pete, thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Darrell. My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up for this weekend on Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM. We want you to have a great day, but remember, leadership begins with you.